let's talk about some of the bad things with email, and then some of the things that you can do to be more effective when it comes to communicating via email. I hesitate to say negotiating via email because I don't really advocate for that. But we'll talk about some things that you can change to make your communication via email a little bit better. So some of the things off the top of my mind that are bad about email. First and foremost, you can't control your tone via email. It's interpreted by the reader. And that doesn't only go for email, that goes for text, that goes for any black letters on a white page, or if you use dark mode, white letters on a black page. But you can't control your tone, and as a result, your effectiveness at being able to deliver a message goes down substantially. That's the kind of outlier in terms of problems when it comes to email. Some other things about email that I'm not a fan of, this is probably because I come from the sales world. I get a bunch of cold emails from time to time. Just checking in, just following up. I encourage anybody who's listening to remove those words from all of your emails. We have such good intentions with those of just nudging somebody to say, hey, I'm checking in, seeing how things are going on your end. But that's what everybody says. And are you just checking in, or does the other side read into that as, oh, you just want a decision? You're not just checking in on what's going on. You want a decision on what we talked about. And, you know, I guess I'm looking at this too much from a sales perspective now, but just in general, if you've got something you want to follow up with somebody on, or you need to kind of nudge along the process, get a call. Whether it's a phone call or a Zoom call, shoot for that, because it's going to make things that much faster. Now, you know, there's obviously, like, in the virtual era that we live in right now, there's a lot of memes and stuff on these short form video sites like that. That meeting could have been an email. So if it's something simple and minor like that, sure, email can be totally appropriate if, you know, you're implementing something new or sharing that you're moving in a certain direction with teammates. Sure, email's fine. But when it comes to negotiation, pick up the phone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can even say that, so where does negotiation begin? And of course, I'm coming from a sales background as well. Negotiation begins with that first intro. So if there's a higher likelihood of converting because you've had a conversation, then call. You can always follow up with an email that's short and succinct and summarizes the conversation. But you're going to gain so much, and you risk losing so much by not picking up the phone and taking the opportunity to connect with that person.
The only time I think, you know, emails over 5 to 7 lines are appropriate is summarizing something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the times that I've sent longer emails, I've told my counterpart, you're going to get a longer email just summarizing what we talked about today. Mm-hmm. So they're at least ready for it. They know what to expect. But if you're starting a relationship or things are in the early part of building that rapport and building that trust, long emails do you no favors. You know, I might read a long email from Marcella, might read a long email from Derek or Sandy or Troy, because, you know, I know there's good intention behind that email. But from somebody that I don't trust, or, you know, I don't feel like they've fully built solid rapport and we've got a good relationship, probably going straight in the trash can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with you that negotiating in email makes things complicated. For the most of the business, if we don't build out the trust or any kind of the rapport, it is really hard to negotiate through the email. So the better way could be set out a tone that we set out a schedule for the Zoom meeting call or whatever kind of the phone call discussion or face-to-face discussion that could make things easier, because we can notice the counterpart's emotions and dynamic. And one of the most important things we're talking about, we should read by our eyes, right? Everybody have a body language. When we have a face-to-face discussion, instead of discussion by the email, we can read their body language at the same time. Sometimes it means a lot. Mm-hmm. Nick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those you know, affect shifts, as we always refer to, the dynamics on the other side. When you can see somebody, it makes your job that much easier. You know, you try to send a quote via email, or you try to send anything via email, you miss the reaction of the other side. And that's huge, because now you've got a huge space in between when you send that email to them and when that next communication is. So that's going to kind of, you know, start to brew up a storm in them. If they don't like what you sent, that's when you start getting ghosted, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Zoom call or in-person meeting, ideal. Because to Joanne's point, you see the affect of the other side. Phone call is a nice second place. Mm-hmm. Because you can still pick up affects through that phone call, whether it's a sigh or a pen tapping or, you know, fidgeting. You can notice those things in a phone call. You may miss some, but you can notice those a lot better. So having that ability to see somebody is extremely important.
Yeah. And having that verbal conversation allows those opportunities to happen. Whereas email, you're really restricting. You're still guided more by your goal, and that's something we should be concerned about and weary of. That's why we always want to go for the call.
Yeah, your ability to influence, your ability to diffuse negative emotions on the other side with text or email is very low. Very, very low. You may have some effect with, you know, mirrors or asking questions, but when things start to get tense, or there's something that's hanging up a certain negotiation, you can't do that in written communication. Mm-hmm. And if you are able to, it's going to take you a really long time. And I would submit that just get on the phone, save everybody a lot of time, make things move a lot faster. The other thing that grinds my gears, generic subject lines. We looked you up. Free month of blank. This was multiple different services. This may solve your problem. How do you know I have a problem?
I was just going to say that.
How do you know I have a problem? You looked me up. Okay, great. I opened the body of the email. All of the information was inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, so you looked me up and you took no time doing anything. There was no personalization. This is just a template that you have. So get creative with subject lines. Now, I'm not saying you have to be like some wizard when it comes to these subject lines, but something, you know, whether it's more personal, whether it's, you know, a no-oriented question, maybe even an accusations audit. Or if you've been in conversation with somebody for a while, maybe it's a label. Mm-hmm. Hey, seems like things have stalled out on your end. Now, depending on if you're looking at that on your phone or your computer, they may be able to see the subject line. They may not be able to see the subject line, but it's just, it's more creative than we looked you up. Free month of blank. I want some personal touches to it, or something that doesn't read like a template.
You want to be more genuine. You want people to be more genuine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Here's one that I see in business negotiations, and it's a positive and a negative. It depends on how you use it. Someone gets an email that fires them up. You know, it's an intense negotiation and it's sensitive, and they get an email from the other side that fires them up. And what do? Immediately respond. Immediately just get to typing. And this email, not only is it long, but now it's emotionally infused. And so as in verbal communications, we don't necessarily need to respond right away, but we definitely don't need to respond in an email negotiation. First of all, we shouldn't be negotiating via email. And secondly, we shouldn't be responding right away to an email that fires us up. We need to slow it down and take advantage of the fact that it is an email, thankfully, that we received.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Email gives us this space. On one hand, it's very nice to have space to not immediately have to respond to something. On the other hand, if you take too long or you respond too quickly.
Yes. Yeah.
Now you're hurting the relationship. You respond too quickly. You come back with emotionally charged things. You haven't thought it over. You haven't thought of their perspective and how they type that email. You respond with something that's just going to blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
The latter, you wait 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours. Now the other side is like, why are you ghosting me? Mm-hmm. I thought we had a good relationship. What did I do? Is this deal going this way or that way? And now they start to have all these thoughts fester in their head. So it's a blessing and a curse. So, you know, think about the promptness in which you respond to emails. And here's something that I'm very guilty of. Travel day, going to the airport, in the lift, etc. I'll look at an email and I won't respond to it. And then I forget about it until 2 days later. And I'm like, oh, shoot.
Yes. Yeah. So you're not one of those one email in your inbox kind of person, Nick, is that what you're saying?
No, I can't have any unread emails in my inbox. That's all. And I'm sure some of us are guilty with this, not only via email, but also text. You read somebody's text, you read somebody's email, and you're like, oh, I'll get back to it, you know, after I go through security or after I get these things done. And then you forget about it. And 2 days go past and they're like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, shoot. So that's a little bit of more holding yourself accountable in that, but be prompt in your email response. If you can't get to it in that moment, either have your out of office on or send them an email and say, hey, I'm traveling today. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
That's a great point.
Just as like an acknowledgement, mm-hmm. because I've been on the other side of that where I've sent emails and not got responses for a couple of days. And I get, hey, sorry, I was traveling. And I'm like, there's a good chance you probably read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably did. And the intent wasn't negative. It was just, right. I didn't have a chance to get back to you. But then again, we read tone into everything and we, you know, assume. And that's the luxury with an email is that we can respond to people. But it can create bad habits. When we see an email and there's something there that makes us hesitant to respond to, or it makes us take time, then we should really be asking ourselves, should this be a phone call? Like, I know it's uncomfortable, but because it's uncomfortable, maybe it shouldn't be an email. Maybe this should be a phone call.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So, if you two aren't against it now, I think that's a nice transition into some things that you can do, from your side to communicate via email. We've already beat over the head, push it to a conversation, a voice-to-voice conversation, a face-to-face conversation. Push it to that. The thing we always run into or that we hear is, well, you know, Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, these people, they just really like, you know, emailing. That's their preferred version of communication. I call BS. When you get email responses that are long, pick one thing, label it, mirror it, paraphrase it. They're going to come back, hey, you didn't answer my other questions, blah, 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 blah. Pick one thing out, label, mirror, paraphrase, ask a question, whatever it is. Show, you know, just make it a little more difficult on them to negotiate via email so it becomes their idea to get on the phone. That's one option. The other option is just go straight at it with a no-oriented question. You know, how uncomfortable would it make you if we had a, I like random numbers, 11-minute phone call or 11-minute Zoom call? No-oriented question and a random number catches their attention. They're going to be like, 11 minutes, 13 minutes, not 5, not 10, not 15, not even 30. Pick a random number, because some people, particularly the analysts, will then play a game with you of like, let's see if you can stick to that 11 minutes that you said.
It's good to know.
At 10 and a half minutes, you say, hey, I told you it was going to be 11 minutes. Let's stop here. We can continue the conversation elsewhere. And they'll say, you got me on the phone now. Let's just finish now. Or you'll reschedule it. You'll talk about more another time. But just the no-oriented question with a specific amount of time is a nice, direct, short way to get somebody on the phone. Any other thoughts on that, Marcella?
Yeah, and they're also inviting you when you do stop. So it is important to stop actually at right before the 11 minutes, because then it's their idea to continue the conversation. So now you're not in that position where you've taken up half an hour or 45 minutes of their time and they're blaming it psychologically on you. They've asked you to go on, which is, it's really a great place to be if you know that you're connecting with them, if they're asking you to continue.
Yeah.
Sometimes I use the labels. I really love these skills. Because especially for the new business, when you have write a simple email back and forth, you already know that negotiate by the email is not efficiency. So we can say, sounds like you have a vision about the new proposal. Sounds like you have a new vision about our corporation. Is it a bad idea if we could set up 15 minutes Zoom call next week? 9 out of 10, your client or your supplier probably agree. Because for one thing, they think about, 15 minutes or 11 minutes, that is an odd number, right? They ask themselves, why it is a 15 minutes phone call, not 30 minutes. So they could thinking about that. Mm-hmm. For another things, we just have a little bit break in between. We don't necessarily bombard the message in the long email. We can keep it short. Use the labels and then not a random question. Keep it simple.
All right, some other things that I had written down as some better ways to communicate via email or text. I mentioned catchy subject lines. Think of creative things that you can come up with. I gave you some examples that you could use: accusations, audits, no-oriented questions, labels, or even something specific to the person that you're talking to. And here, you know, Troy is very good at this, and I am not. But he's talked about how he follows up with clients all the time just to touch base with them. He doesn't ask them how negotiations are. He completely removes business from the equation, checks in not only at the holidays, he checks in all the time with his clients. And because Troy is such a personable guy and really loves to get to know people, you know, he'll ask people, you know, how were your kids, you know, gymnastics tryouts or, you know, whatever it is that he managed to find out about them, and he makes it personal to them. And when people read that email, they're like, oh, you actually listened to me saying those things? And that means a lot to people. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be like a black swan skill in terms of catchiness in an email, but something that they're going to read it and be like, oh, mm-hmm. That was genuine. That was to me. That wasn't to, you know, get me to spend X amount of dollars. That wasn't to get me to sign on the dotted line. That was just to me as a person, because that rarely happens in email. That rarely happens in communication that we recognize there's human on the other side.
Which makes the deal, when the deal does happen, so much easier, because the trust is built and they know that it's not an investment that's just for the deal. Like, they know you're a good person because you took the time to show them. So
a good rule of thumb is limit it to about 5 lines. Like anything beyond that starts to become too cumbersome to read, mm-hmm. or people aren't going to get to it right away. So keep it to about 5 lines. And the things I like to do in email, depending on the context of the conversation, if you're delivering bad news, accusations, audits. Now, be very careful littering your emails with accusations, audits. Not 3, not 4, not 5, 1, maybe 2, depending mm-hmm. on the context of the situation. I came to what I thought was an agreement with a certain person. They introduced me to procurement. Procurement loves to negotiate via email, from my experience anyways. And it was always, hey, you know, we know that you talked to so-and-so. We see your price of this. You know, why don't you take 15% off? And I'm like, okay, here we go. So my response was almost always the same, some iteration of greeting. I know you're just doing your job. Accusations audit. And then I would follow it up with a softener of, I'm afraid there's no wiggle room on the price. Always try to end it with a positive note, mm-hmm. something to the effect of, you know, really appreciate you reaching out, or really looking forward to working with you together on this, something to make the email end positively, because the last impression is the lasting impression. But what, that email contained 3 lines of text, very short, very succinct, recognizing that I know they're just doing their job, standing my ground with a phase of no, I'm afraid there's just no wiggle room here. And then the last impression is the lasting impression. That's how simply you can respond to these emails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I love that. This is probably going to be a deal breaker on a negotiated term, just great something one. Easy.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be an elaborate list of accusations audits, because they're going to read through one, they're going to read through two. By the third one, they're going to start to say, what's this all about? Mm-hmm. And their guard's going to go up, because you don't have control of the tone. And on top of that, it feels templated. It doesn't feel genuine. It feels like a robotic response. So when you're using accusations audits via email, 1, maybe 2 in most circumstances, and make that 1 or 2 powerful. Don't, you know, maybe something stronger than I have bad news. Something a little bit stronger based on the scenario or based on the circumstances of the other side.
Yeah.
I mentioned I'm afraid. I'm sorry and I'm afraid are great softeners for emails. Because you can't control your tone, I'm sorry and I'm afraid soften the tone up just a little bit. Is it going to make you, a wizard when it comes to negotiating the email? Of course not. But it helps soften it, so you have a little bit more control over the tone that you're delivering. We've kind of beaten up no oriented questions in email. The only one we haven't touched is the have you given up on, which at this point, I feel like everybody and their brother knows about the have you given up on email, as they should. It's a great attention getter, but that subject line only, have you given up on this partnership, on working together? Have you given up on the Black Swan Group, as that restarter to communications when you've been ghosted? Here's the thing that I think a lot of people fail to realize after using the have you given up on email. They don't trust you. If they did trust you, they would have never ghosted you. So when you restart that communication, don't go back to your old habits. Mm-hmm. Don't continue doing the same thing that you've been doing, but instead lean back into tactical empathy. Ask yourself, what have I missed?
Yes.
You know, what is holding the other side up? What could be standing in the way of making this happen? And be curious about it, because the only way to continue that relationship and conversation and to avoid getting ghosted again is by building trust. If you go back to the same ways, you're getting ghosted again. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to find yourself 3 months later sending another "have you given up on?" And you're like, well, the "have you given up on" is working great, but I just can't seem to close this deal. There's a lack of trust.
Yeah. And if you're repetitive with the same email, it's only going to work for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So the "have you given up on" email, no body, no salutation, no greeting, nothing, just the subject line only. I mentioned, the subject lines, some catchy subject lines. I came up with a few off the top of my head, and this is all industry dependent. Totally depends on the position that you're in, who you're talking to, etc. But something like, would you hate more fill in the blank? Somebody, you know, if you're trying to get somebody more leads, and that's what you're selling to a business, would you hate more leads? That catches somebody's attention. They're like, no, I wouldn't hate more leads. Who would hate more leads? Does that mean you're going to be 100% successful? Of course not. Welcome to email. Welcome to cold email. But maybe it boosts your percentage by a little bit. Is this a waste of time? Subject line, just to pique somebody's interest. And then, as I mentioned earlier, something personal. I've had the few cold emails that have caught my attention are somebody recognizing something that I wrote in a blog article. Mm-hmm. Somebody seeing one of our videos and saying like, hey, I heard you say this. I thought it was really intelligent, or whatever they say. But then they don't ask for anything. They just recognize it and they throw the email out and see what happens. Now, did I respond to those? No, because I wasn't interested in what they were selling, because I just looked them up rather quickly. Had I been interested in what they were talking about, I'd have been more inclined to do so. Mm-hmm. Personalization matters. So be genuine. Don't just be like everybody else that uses email in this way. Be different.
The only thing I can add is to follow up an email, especially if it's a cold email and you get a response, really drive to the call at that point. Because if you're allowing it to go to an email strand, then you're missing the whole point of the email. If there's anything that comes out of this, it's just emails should be a driver to a phone call.
Yep. Yep. And you sparked another thought. I mentioned just checking in, just following up earlier. Take those out of your emails and use labels. Don't just do things to check a box, but do things with a purpose and do things with an intention. Mm-hmm. So have that genuineness and just be curious. What could cause them to not respond to you in the manner that they said they were going to? Mm-hmm. I always like to follow the rule of thumb, no more than 24 hours for a response to an email. Even if it was just like a, hey, I'm going to have to get with so-and-so to talk about this, and then we can decide how to move forward. At least give them a status update. So in that, and you know, depending on the circumstance, I would say definitely no more than 24 hours, but in some circumstances, maybe no more than 3 or 4 hours. If you're already like very certain on it, no need to wait, no need to, you know, let them sit on it. Cause then they start to have other thoughts come into their mind about what's going on. Is everything okay? Is this going a different way? Marcella, maybe you have a different perspective than I
do. Well, you're the gold star because you're the analyst. And so, of course, I'm the assertive, and I am not the best always with this. I would say you don't want to go beyond the 48 hours. At that point, people are really wondering. 2 days is just a long time. So, but best case, couple hours to 24 hours. And if you don't have an answer, you can always say, would you mind if we take a couple days to look into the details before we give you an answer?
Yeah, I'm assertive also. So time matters. The long emails, I usually don't have the patience to read everything or every single words. It's better to have a face-to-face communication that could make things easier. Another thing could come to my mind about the intuition for the face-to-face discussion or negotiation. We have a very strong intuition when we read a room. For example, especially for women, we can pick up the dynamic emotions from another side. Tactical empathy is all about ability to recognize the dynamic emotions. And another important thing, we should verbalize that. If we cannot read the room, it's really hard to verbalize that recognition. So it's better to have face-to-face discussion or the phone call.
Mm-hmm.